Word on Today FM.
So it's time for our weekly last word of the environment spot. And John Gibbons, are you going to be giving out to me again this week, are you?
Hopefully not, Matt. Hopefully peace will break out. Peace will return to the slot this week. Hopefully.
Okay, well, if people missed last week's encounter in relation to data centres and Dublin Airport passenger numbers, it is available as a podcast if people missed it and want to catch up on it. But let's start with something, I think, positive, that we can all agree is positive. The success of the deposit return scheme. It seems to have been quite phenomenal, the number of bottles and cans that have been returned so far.
Yeah, it's completely remarkable, Matt. I mean, I remember this was introduced earlier this year, around about February, March, and there was a lot of skepticism about it. I remember talk shows, people phoning in. It's an infringement on our liberty. It won't work. Retailers, it's going to shut down retailers, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, all the kind of standard scaremongering that we get every time we try to take a positive environmental step. Now, the good news, and this really is quite remarkable, is that over the months since then, so far, 650 million bottles and cans have been returned. And this means that 110 million euros in deposits have been returned to customers. Imagine that, over 100 million euros returned to people. And that also means over 250 million cans and bottles being recycled. So a typical plastic bottle, Matt, if it's correctly recycled, as these machines do, where it's sorted, that can be reused 7 times. Now, an aluminium can be reused infinite number of times. Now, the issue really at the moment is that in our general unsorted recycling bins, cans and plastic containers are essentially ending up mostly being incinerated. So this is diverting that channel and making sure that they're being collected in a way that allows them to be sorted correctly. And it has been remarkably successful, probably one of the most successful schemes, I would suggest, environmental schemes in Ireland since the famous plastic bag levy of the early 2000s.
Okay, but so you know, you just said something there, John, which is very interesting. And I think a lot of people, this annoys them intensely, is that when they fill their green bin, that they discover that instead of it being recycled, it gets incinerated.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say this is the case in many, many cases. Many of your listeners will recall the good news from our recycling company some time back. They said, great news, you can now put soft plastics in with your hard plastics. And we all went, oh, that's fantastic. It's just made recycling easier. But of course, what's happening, in fact, is that in most cases, this is basically heading directly to the incinerator. And I know a lot of the material in recycle bins in Dublin, for example, is ending up in the incinerator in Ringsend. Now, you might say, if you like, on a scale of bad outcomes, the worst outcome you can have with rubbish, including plastic, of course, is that it ends up loose in the environment, for example, in our waterways, etc. The second worst is that it goes into landfill, which is really, really bad. And the third worst, but still pretty bad, is that it gets incinerated. Now, the incinerators, they'll tell you they've got scrubbers, they reduce a certain amount of the particulate waste coming out of them, they can capture that, but it's still a very unsatisfactory. But the reality is that recycling is, unless you do it like per the return scheme, where you are literally being very precise about what you're getting back and you're being able to then use that material again, most recycling isn't really what people think it is. Because if you look into your green bin, it's a bit of this and a bit of that and a bit of the other. And the question is, how do you possibly sort that? How many thousands of man hours would be required to manually pick their way through that rubbish? And what happens when people, as they do, mix up their rubbish, put the dirty in with it? So the reality is that much of this is, in fact, as you said in the introduction, it is ending up being incinerated, which is not a good outcome, but there are worse outcomes, Matt. And for example, up until relatively recently, what a lot of our recycling was done, it was going on ships and being shipped out to countries like China and India to be, quote, disposed of. Now, of course, what we meant there is out of sight and out of mind, let other countries deal with our rubbish. A number of years ago, China said to the West, we're not taking any more rubbish from Europe. And basically, that has been a big spur and incentive to recycling and indeed to incineration in Ireland, because basically we're producing far too much waste. This is the issue. You see, we get a lot of focus on recycling, but what we don't get much focus on, Matt, is the requirement that we reduce and reuse, because recycling is only the third part of that magic chain, if you like.
Okay, something else I want to ask you about. Is nature's carbon sink failing? And the reason I ask that question is a report which suggests that trees and land absorbed almost no CO2 last year. Where and how could that have been that they... I thought that's what trees and land did.
Yeah, I mean, we basically, humans, as you know, have been, we've been sort of pitching huge amounts of emissions into the atmosphere. Now, luckily for us, up until now, nature has been cleaning up our mess. The oceans, for example, have been absorbing vast amounts of carbon from the atmosphere, and also land plants and other activities on land, natural activities, are helping to draw down that carbon. So we would think, for example, of the Amazon rainforest as a huge carbon sink, that it's drawing down millions of tons of carbon. But pretty alarmingly, what scientists discovered for 2023, the way they described it, Matt, they said we're seeing cracks in the resilience of the Earth's systems, massive cracks on land, terrestrial ecosystems losing their carbon store and uptake capacity. Even the oceans are showing signs of instability. So what this tells us basically is that we've pushed land, terrestrial and ocean systems to the edge. We've applied so much pressure on them. And apparently the key reason why land-based plants are beginning to struggle to draw down CO2 is rising temperatures. They're beginning to basically be unable to suck up the extra CO2 in the atmosphere. So we've got this large subsidy from nature that has allowed us to dump our waste products, our emissions into the atmosphere and expect them to be drawn down either by the oceans or by terrestrial plants and other species. But what's happening now basically is those sinks, Matt, we thought they were filling, but they seem to be simply failing. That as temperatures rise, as climate systems destabilize, they're becoming a lot less effective. And it is important to say, by the way, a couple of things to say about this. Number one, the climate models, the IPCC climate models that make our projections and talk about things like net zero and how we get there and 1.5 and 2, they do not factor the collapse of land sinks at all. In other words, what's happening or what we've witnessed in 2023, and we know it's happened for at least 8 of the last 10 years, is that the land appears finally to be unable to take any more of our carbon and it's beginning to belch it back. We know, for example, that the Amazon rainforest in recent years has become what's called a net carbon sink. That basically means it's been under so much stress, it's experienced so much burning that it now is contributing more carbon to the atmosphere every year than it draws down. So that's what they mean by a net carbon source. And what we're seeing, Matt, is that effect multiplying around the world. Now, you might say, well, what does that mean and how does it affect us? What it means is we're going to see an acceleration of climate change. We saw it in 2023, the hottest year ever. It's now statistically highly likely that 2024 is going to be the hottest year ever recorded. So what we're seeing basically is an acceleration of climate change and an acceleration and an intensification of these processes. Now, if I could draw your listeners' attention briefly to there was a document called the 2024 State of the Climate Report that was published just a couple of weeks ago. And it opened as follows. It said, we're on the brink of an irreversible climate disaster. Much of the fabric of life on Earth is imperiled. We're stepping into a critical and unpredictable new phase of the climate crisis. Now, these are strong words, Matt. What they're basically saying is, where nature is no longer able to absorb the pressures being applied by humans. And it's really a staggering warning that we need to really be getting our foot on the brake. And really, that's what this comes down to. We have got to decelerate. We've got to rapidly decarbonize. We've got to pull back from basically at the moment, we have our collective foot on the throat of nature. And those natural systems, we depend on them for everything. And they're in the process of breaking down.
Okay, when it comes to that, the Climate Change Advisory Council yesterday said failure to meet EU targets by 2030 could cost Ireland €8 billion. I suggest to you, John, there might be a few people out there who'll say, well, sure, the government is running massive budgetary surpluses. That €8 billion, we can use it rather than having to interfere with our ongoing way of life.
Yeah, I think that will be the attitude taken in some quarters, that we'll just buy our way out of this again. But I do think this emphasizes that these targets, these are statutory targets that we have signed up to at EU level. And they're not there for fun. They're Ireland, as we've often talked about on this program, we're an over contributor, Matt, to the global climate crisis. It was put to me by a scientist the other day that if every country in the world was like Ireland and lived like the Irish, the global temperatures would today be more than 3 degrees centigrade above pre-industrial. In other words,
but see, John, I know what people are going to say to that is they're going to say, you know, you and your proportionality and all the rest of it is not relevant. We're a small country with only 5.2 million people. So no matter what we do, it's only a tiny fraction of what's going on globally. You know, stick it to the Chinese and the Indians first before you start talking about our miserable 5.2 million people contribution.
Yeah, I know you don't actually believe that, Matt, because clearly we have what's called common but differentiated responsibility. In other words, why should an Irish person get a free pass on overpolluting? Are we in what way are we different to the equivalent 5.2 million people in a province in China, or 5.2 million people in India, or 5.2 million people in a state in America? The point really is, in this particular boat, we're in the boat together, and we're going to all have to bail out the boat together. We cannot have the attitude, especially among complacent rich countries like Ireland, that basically, divil take the hindmost, we're only small. The fact is, Matt, that the 5.2 million people that you described there, we produce more carbon emissions than 300 million people living in sub-Saharan Africa. I repeat, 300 million people living in sub-Saharan Africa. So there's a huge issue here, not just of science, Matt, but also of equity. I mean, are we entitled to take 60 times the carbon share, and in a way that is inflicting real misery and future hardship onto those people? We have that responsibility. And I'm sure you agree with me on this, by the way.
Anyway, the last thing I want to ask you about is disruptive climate protests, because I know quite a lot of our listeners get very annoyed at the idea of people shutting down roads or throwing paint over paintings to make a point that we all know anyway. I see there's been a new survey done in the United Kingdom to look into the effectiveness of this disruptive climate protest. What does this suggest?
Yeah, this is quite interesting, Matt. There was about 1,400 people were polled. And what the researchers did, they basically looked at these people's attitude to supporting what we would call a moderate group, in this case, Friends of the Earth, how they felt about supporting them before protests and after protests. And what I mean by the protests, these are the more disruptive ones, which included like Just Stop Oil, shutting down motorways and blocking traffic. And what they found was they got a bounce. Where support for a moderate climate action groups actually went up as a result of this. Now, this is a phenomenon that might sound contradictory, but in fact, it makes sense. Effectively, it's known as the radical flank effect. And I'll give you a quick example. For example, during the civil rights movement in the 1960s, you had mainstream characters like Martin Luther King, who advocated nonviolence, who advocated working within the system. But outside of him, there were fringe groups like Malcolm X and so on, and the Black Panthers, who said, no, we should go in more direct action. We should smash things up and shut things down. We saw the same thing with the suffragette movement. The political wing of the suffragettes were negotiating with government, but the radical wing were out blowing up post boxes. And the fact is that the radical actions of the civil rights movement, of the suffragettes, of the climate movement, they forced governments, forced administrators to the table, not necessarily, Matt, to sit down and break bread with the more extreme people, but to deal with the people representing, if you like, the moderate or midline view. So it turns out that radical climate action creates the political space for more effective response and a more urgent response.
I'm going to put that to the listeners to see if they agree. We're out of time, John, but they can contact us on The Last Words text or WhatsApp line 087-4100-102. We look forward to seeing you again here and back in the studio next Thursday, John. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Matt.
The Last Word on Today FM.